Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're all about getting you those clear, actionable insights for, well, navigating life.
That's the goal. Quick, but thorough understanding.
And today, we're really getting into something powerful from the RAFT to Freedom framework. It's called the Resolve to Abandon.
Mm-hmm. The second of the four resolves.
Yeah. And this isn't just, you know, stopping a bad habit. It feels much deeper. Like, it's about finding real freedom, moving beyond just forcing yourself.
Precisely. And our mission here is to pull out the key nuggets from the sources, focusing on, well, practical stuff you can use, but also a really compassionate view of these deep-rooted patterns.
Compassion feels key.
It really is. And we'll be mindful about language, too. Instead of addiction, we'll talk about the human struggle with craving and avoidance.
Okay.
And think of recovery more as a healing journey. Relapse, let's call it a setback. It just reframes it as part of learning, you know? Less blame, more kindness.
That makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
So within that RAFT metaphor we've talked about, where does this resolve to abandon fit? You said it's like managing the raft.
Exactly. Think of it as actively managing the raft's course and its condition. Patching leaks, bailing water, maybe even ditching some heavy cargo that's weighing you down.
Got it. Okay, let's dive into that core idea then, the resolve to abandon. What is it really? Because abandon sounds quite strong.
It is strong, but in an intentional way. It's about applying conscious effort to let go of unhelpful states, habits, reactions, after they've already arisen.
Ah, okay. So it's not just trying to prevent them, but dealing with them when they show up.
Exactly. It's an active moment-by-moment thing. The sources say any hope for freedom from harmful cravings and aversions starts by abandoning those primary patterns.
Right. It reminds me of that Jon Kabat-Zinn quote.
You can't stop the waves, but you can learn to surf.
Yes, that's it. So urge surfing is a perfect example of this resolve in action. You're navigating the wave, not trying to magically flatten the ocean.
Beautifully put. And it highlights a key distinction. Abandonment isn't just abstinence.
Okay, tell me more about that difference.
Well, abstinence can often feel like, you know, white-knuckling it, like you're deprived. Abandonment, though, is described as an act of embodied intentionality.
Embodied intentionality, like using your whole self.
It's a choice you make, consciously directing your energy away from the unhelpful thing. It's not just mental, it's almost physical. Think about it for yourself. Does just not doing something feel freeing, or does actively choosing to let it go feel more liberating?
Definitely the choosing. Abstinence can feel like a constant battle.
Exactly. That internal feeling, that sense of agency, that's what we're aiming for.
Okay, bringing it back to the RAFT metaphor.
Yeah.
Patching leaks. Bailing water.
Yep. So the resolve to abandon is like being that skillful sailor. A craving pops up. That's a leak you need to skillfully patch.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling overwhelmed by negative emotions. That's like toxic water flooding the deck you need to bail it out. Unwholesome thoughts swirling around. That's harmful cargo you need to jettison.
So it's constant vigilance, but in a skillful, not anxious way.
Right. Managing the boat when these things inevitably appear.
And we should remember the five precepts like harmlessness, truthfulness, those are the bedrock, right? The sturdy planks of the raft.
Absolutely. They provide that ethical foundation, that self-respect and stability you need before you can even start doing this deeper work effectively. They keep the whole thing sound.
Makes sense.
And alongside that, a practice like mindfulness of breathing, that's your reliable anchor.
Especially when things get choppy.
Exactly. In those early stages of healing, but honestly, throughout the journey, it helps stabilize the raft, gives you that calm center amidst the storm.
Okay, so we get the what and the why. How do we actually do it? How do we cultivate that ability to pause and choose differently?
It really starts with mindful observation, just bringing this gentle, non-judgmental awareness to whatever's arising, the craving, the difficult feeling, the unhelpful thought, just noticing it.
Without immediately jumping in to fix it or push it away.
Precisely. Just letting it be seen.
Yeah.
And this leads into something called metacognition.
Thinking about thinking.
Yeah. It's like stepping back and watching your thoughts as just phenomena, passing events, not you.
That feels huge. The idea that we are not our thoughts or cravings, they are simply mental events.
It is huge. It creates space. And that space, that pause, as Raoul May called it, that's where our freedom lies.
The gap between the trigger and the reaction.
Exactly. That's the moment where we can bring in clear comprehension, seeing the situation clearly, the urge, the trigger, the potential outcome, and consciously choose.
And neuroscience actually backs this up, right?
Right.
It shows mindfulness changes the brain.
It does. practices like this seem to strengthen activity in areas like the prefrontal cortex regions linked to self-control, emotion regulation. It literally helps you build the capacity to create that pause.
Wow. So you're actually training your brain to be better at this.
In a way, yes. Making those skillful choices becomes more accessible over time.
Okay, this is great. Let's get practical. What are some specific techniques the sources mention? You mentioned acronyms.
Yes, some really helpful ones. First, there's MARA.
MARA, Mindful Awareness Responds Appropriately.
That's the one. Now, Mara, in this context, is like the personification of our inner obstacles.
Like craving, doubt.
Craving, aversion, self-doubt, those compulsive patterns.
Yeah. Think of Mara as the inner saboteur, or the voice of addiction, or just that old habit voice.
Okay.
And interestingly, the Buddha apparently encountered Mara more after his awakening.
Really? Why?
Suggests that greater awareness just means you see these inner challenges more clearly. They don't disappear. You just get better at recognizing them.
So the practices.
To name it. Literally acknowledge it. Mara, I see you. Mara, I know you. And then instead of getting drawn in, you respond with mindful awareness and an appropriate, maybe kind response. You see it. You acknowledge it. You don't fight it. But you don't follow it.
Acknowledge, don't engage. I like that. What's next? Then there's sober. A really simple step-by-step guide for when a trigger hits.
Okay, sober.
Stop. Whatever you're doing, just pause. Observe. Notice the urge, the feeling, without judgment. Breathe. Take a conscious breath. Center yourself. Expand. Widen your awareness beyond the urge. See the bigger picture. Notice it's temporary. And finally, respond. Choose a skillful action. Don't just react.
Stop. Observe, breathe, expand, respond. Very clear. Easy to remember in the moment.
Mm-hmm. One more. ALSA.
ALSA.
Okay. This one's great for difficult emotions or those ingrained reactive habits. Four steps. Embrace. Turn toward the difficult feeling with acceptance. Don't run.
Okay. Embrace it then.
Let be or let go. Allow the feeling or reactivity to be there without pouring fuel on the fire. Just let it be. Let it pass through. See the stopping. This is interesting. Notice the moment when the reactivity naturally starts to fade or lose its grip. That's a moment of freedom right there. Acknowledge it.
So you notice the letting go happening on its own.
Yes. And finally, act. From that place of relative stillness, choose a skillful, compassionate response, not from the heat of the reaction.
Embrace. Let belay go. See the stopping act. These seem like really powerful ways to work with that pause.
They are, because they shift you from reacting blindly, impulsively, to observing non-judgmentally.
And that brings in curiosity, self-compassion.
Exactly. Instead of beating yourself up, you get curious, there's that urge again. And you meet it with kindness. That's a radical shift for many people.
It really is. So it's not just about the mental techniques, is it? There's an emotional quality needed too.
Absolutely crucial. Successful abandonment requires cultivating the right heart quality. And the big one here is loving kindness, or metta.
Friendliness towards oneself.
Yes. That attitude of friendliness and self-compassion is what allows you to meet your cravings, meet your struggles, meet yourself with the kindness that actually makes letting go possible. It cuts through shame and stigma.
It helps you become your own ally, maybe.
Perfectly said. Your own best ally on this healing journey.
And what about effort? Does that play a role?
It does, but maybe not in the way we usually think. It's called courageous energy, or virya.
Virya.
But it's not that frantic, white-knuckled striving. It's not forcing things through sheer will until you crash.
So what is it?
It's more like persistence, resilience, the quality of just keeping coming back to skillful choices, moment after moment, day after day.
Like gentle persistence.
Right. The Buddha used a great simile tuning a lute. Too tight, the string snaps. Too loose, it makes no sound.
Finding the balance.
Exactly. Balanced effort. Not too hard, not too soft, just right.
That makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, loving kindness, balanced energy. What else supports this?
Discernment or panya. Wisdom. Insight.
How does wisdom help us abandon things?
Well, this is about a fearless investigation into how things really are. Understanding suffering, seeing that things are impermanent, grasping this idea of not self.
Not self, meaning there's no fixed me driving everything.
Kind of. It means seeing through the illusion of a solid, permanent self. When you understand these things deeply, it enables wise abandonment. You're not just using willpower. You're letting go because you see the illusions that were fueling the craving in the first place.
So wisdom cuts the root, in a way.
That's a great way to put it.
This all leads back to how we frame this whole journey, doesn't it? The language we use.
It's incredibly important. using language that empowers, that heals. So moving away from addiction towards seeing it as perhaps the human struggle with craving and avoidance.
Or you mentioned a relational disorder born from trauma.
Yes, sometimes that framing is helpful too. The key idea from the sources is seeing it as a learned behavior driven by motivated repetition.
Rather than purely a brain disease.
Exactly. The brain does change with habit formation, that's natural learning, but framing it solely as a disease can sometimes feel disempowering. Seeing it as learned behavior opens up the possibility of unlearning it and learning something new.
Okay. In recovery, how do we reframe that?
Thinking of it as healing or liberation, maybe aiming for, you know, an unshakable liberation of the heart.
Liberation, I like that.
And remembering that this healing happens via many pathways. There's no single right way. And it's usually non-linear. There will be ups and downs.
Which brings us to relapse. You suggested setbacks.
Yes. Calling them setbacks helps us see them not as failures, but as a natural, though not inevitable, part of the healing process.
So they become learning opportunities.
Precisely. It fosters resilience, not self-blame. You learn from the setback and keep going.
That feels so much more constructive.
It is. And this ties into those deeper concepts, too, like impermanence and not self.
How so?
Well, really getting that everything changes, that our bodies change, that no external thing can bring lasting satisfaction. It chips away at the core delusion-driving craving. You start to see the futility of chasing fleeting pleasures or running from temporary discomfort. It fosters non-attachment.
And the not-self idea frees you from labels.
Absolutely. If there's no fixed, permanent self, then you can't be an addict in some essential, unchanging way. You are processes, constantly changing. That insight itself is incredibly liberating. You're not defined by a past habit.
Wow. Okay. So putting it all together, the resolve to abandon is this active, ongoing choice.
Mm-hmm. Applied consistently, moment by moment.
Supported by mindfulness, these heart qualities like kindness and balanced energy and this deeper wisdom.
Exactly. And all viewed through a lens of compassionate, inclusive language that focuses on healing and liberation.
It really feels like equipping you listening with practical tools, but also a whole new perspective.
That's the hope. To see that the intention behind abandonment isn't about depriving yourself, it's actually a powerful, liberating choice for yourself.
So here's something to really chew on. If our deepest freedom truly lies in that crucial pause between impulse and reaction, what new possibilities might open up in your life when you truly master this art of letting go?